Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
You're listening to Redeeming Double Feature. My name is Eric 13, and I'm here casting out the sin with Michael Kester.
Praise be, praise be.
We're going to once again, in this month of sorry about that one time double feature, we're going to talk about Eyes Without a Face today. And what's the other movie?
American Mary, Babies for Soska. Hashtag Babies for Soska.
Ah, yes. This week's trending Twitter hashtag. Babies for Soska.
Everybody who's listening to Double Feature who has a Twitter handle, my Twitter handle is at Pling Michael, P-L-I-N-G, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Yours is underscore.
Doesn't matter. I'll look for the hashtag.
Right.
Don't worry about it. This is easier.
So everybody go ahead, post your first Soska movie, whether it was See No Evil 2, whether it was ABCs of Death 2, a lot of twos, or maybe American Mary. Go ahead and do that, and then go ahead and hashtag Babies First Soska. Let's see if we can get some buzz.
Let's see how excited they get, is what you mean to say.
Babies First Soska.
So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. We're going to talk about why the Soska twins aren't on the podcast. We're going to talk about Canada.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Eyes Without a Face, which...
Again!
We need to... I joke about it being a redemption month. Also, no sin, no God. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But the...
Praise be.
Eyes Without a Face we did on one of these massacre shows.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't talk about this much last time with Phantom of the Paradise because you had a really long-winded excuse for it. But we gave each of these movies a couple minutes. And I know we don't do the same movies over again on the show, but we really never sat and watched Eyes Without a Face.
Yeah.
I mean, we did, but the same way we watched Phantom of the Paradise.
Well, we sat while Eyes Without a Face was on and waited for somebody to tell us that they refilled the monster bin in the front front lobby. That's what we actually did.
Oh man, I forgot about the monster bin. That must have cost them so much money.
Not as much money as the 20 pizzas that got delivered.
The Music Box Massacre had a free giant tub of Monster energy drinks.
Yeah.
And in my entire life, through all the things I've been through... through Silicon Valley, through where everything is just catered around the clock. And even on film sets and stuff here, I've never been around a giant bin of free Monster. It just doesn't, those things are $6 a can or something. I don't know how the fuck. That's an exaggeration right now and won't be in like 2 years.
Right.
When people,
it's an exaggeration as we record this, but not by the time it airs.
Yeah. Like if you were to go back to year one of the show, for instance, I don't know. I mean, that's,
do you ever,
it's about as good.
Do you ever just watch a movie and marvel at the gas prices in the background of a scene with a gas station?
That's why I'll never shoot a gas station. Totally takes me out of everything.
Yep.
There's not a lot of things where I won't just go with the flow, pretend along with the movie, but gas prices, I just have to look at them.
Yeah.
I don't know why in video games, they don't have some mechanism to automatically update the prices with today's prices, because I think that would be a really great place where games could finally start beating out movies one
right.
stupid little thing at a time. The thing I was going to say is Spiral and Bad Santa.
Huh, that's much better.
Fuck yeah. I had not seen Spiral, which is funny.
Yeah.
And Bad Santa, I did watch for Christmas. I'm not going to lie.
I didn't because I had so many other ones to watch and it says Santa in the title. So it's not all enough for me.
Double Feature Year 8, the one where we talk about Christmas for every episode.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, blasphemously rib people about there not being a God.
Praise be.
That was on year one of the show. It was, man, you want to talk about some full circle stuff. Spiral was...
You can't say full circle and then say spiral.
Full spiral. To come full spiral.
Thank you.
I also learned how to deal with accidentally saying things and making puns. So that's happened in the last 8 years. And the other thing is that it's still one of my favorite Aeroscope movies, if not my favorite one. It's the movie that made me immediately think, oh, Will Barrett, for the short I did.
Mm-hmm.
There were actually moments. There's one in particular where... Will's looking at it and he's marveling over how he's masturbating over how beautiful it is. And then he kind of pauses and goes, you know, this is just like that scene we did in Spiral. He pauses again and goes, maybe I do have a style. You might have said signature. I don't remember. But yeah, it's a gorgeous scene. Thanks, Will Barrett. And thanks, Double Feature. 24 minutes is the other thing. How does this work, 24 minutes?
Approximately 24 minutes is the arbitrary time at which we're going to stop talking about one movie and start talking about the other. The first 24 minutes is when you're liable to get spoiled in the first film. And the remaining part of this podcast is when you're liable to get spoiled on anything else, and not just the films in question, just pretty much anything.
You think we just give up by then?
Things run off the rails at about the 24:01 minute mark.
See, I've been keeping that as where we skip to the second film.
Yeah.
But all this time we had a disconnect. You thought that was just the point where the show gets fucking nutty.
Yeah, that's just the point. Yeah.
Well,
it happened last week. I'm expecting it's going to happen this week as well.
Hey, you can blame fucking Forbidden Zone for that. That is not my fault at all. Okay, maybe it's a little my fault. Where do we start with Eyes Without a Face?
The Billy Idol song?
It's no. Available on Apple Music. And
right.
Actually, if you're getting Double Feature Year One, you can just go ahead and pick up. I want to evangelize this lesser known artist in the spoken word section.
Praise be.
Billy Idol. Who's putting the show off the rails now, huh? Eyes Without a Face, we're having some dispute over where it lives in cinema.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I think we agree, influential.
Yes.
And
iconic.
And a classic sort of piece.
Definitely. It's a list topper.
Yeah. The dispute, though, is what type of movie is this?
Right.
If we see Psycho, we're on the same wavelength about what it meant at the time and what it could offer now and how different generations think about it.
Similarly, when we watch Friday the 13th, part one, same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody knows where it lives. Everybody knows where it came from. Everybody understands Kevin Bacon's career.
Sure.
It's just a thing that people understand its cubicle in cinematic history.
John wanted us to do Eyes Without a Face. That's where we had to consider, okay, are we redoing Massacre stuff? And then immediately went, haven't we already done that?
Right.
Last year or something.
Right.
So it's fine. Didn't we do that with Pontypool?
Yeah, in May.
And I was excited to go back to it. But I don't know, generationally or just in the history of cinema, how John views the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know when he brings it to us what part is the appeal. You know, one of the other movies he mentioned us doing is Metropolis.
Right.
Again.
Which, again,
incredibly, incredibly iconic, sure. Incredibly historical. But I know where that lives.
Yeah.
And I know why people watch it today. I know if it was going on in a film school or a film appreciation course, I have an idea what they'd be talking about.
Yeah.
Where do you think that is with Eyes Without a Face?
Well, that's the interesting part is when I watched Eyes Without a Face for the first time in a uncomfortable, chilly,
monster deprived
movie theater. Right. I remember watching it and admittedly thinking to myself, man, this is some French bullshit. This is over my head. I don't know why everybody's on this movie's dick, but it's super fucking French. And that's probably why I don't get it. I'm just some dumb kid. I remember thinking pretty much exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I watch it. And again, I don't know which one of me is right. I don't know. There's a spectrum presented because here's the other end of it. I watched it this time and I went, this is kind of a exploitative, you know, I changed my sex type movie that has right. some ridiculously visually disturbing stuff and happens to be in French.
Yeah. So the question for me is, are we watching something like Herschel Gordon Lewis?
Right. Yeah. See, the question for me becomes, are we watching Saw 4?
Uh-huh. Right.
Or are we watching Solaris?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the things I look at in trying to determine that is what genre takes it today and runs with it. And all we're trying to figure out is historically the reason people come back to it today.
Yep.
The influence it had, I guess more specifically, this movie was created, it did important things for cinema. And
it got hella banned. That's an important aspect of this.
Okay, that's again Herschel Gordon Lewis territory, I think.
Right. But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And so I feel like the best thing we can do is look at what films today pulled inspiration from it or what genres, and that gives us an indication of the impact that it had, of what films might not exist, let's say, without Eyes Without a Face.
Saw 4.
Well, I didn't have anything specific in mind, except maybe The Skin I Live In. I think that would not sure. exist without Eyes Without a Face.
I think it might. I think yeah, we would have gotten there.
You still think so?
I've seen a lot of, I've seen a lot of that guy's movies at this point. I think The Skin I Live In was a natural progression.
I think we've done a couple of them on the show. But horror is definitely the place I go. I don't think, yeah, it's funny to mention The Skin I Live In because it's not really a horror movie. But even movies that live on the end of the thriller kind of place where, you know, you go on Netflix, you hit Thriller. I don't have to use my Blockbuster analogy anymore. I love this. Mm-hmm. You hit Thriller and you'll notice some of the films that are also listed in horror are listed there.
Whereas right. some and the of other ones and the ones that aren't listed in horror star Harrison Ford. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've yeah. been there.
Yeah, right. But still appear on our show, I think. Mm-hmm. Never mm-hmm. thought of myself as a fan of thrillers, but I guess that's 90% of what I watch is a thriller. It's less the thriller section. It's more, I think, the horror section.
But wouldn't it also be in the foreign section?
This is where my Blockbuster analogy breaks apart. The problem with this is that Blockbuster could only have a movie in one section. Right. And Netflix can put it in every section, which I assume is what they do with House of Cards. Getting back to my original point, when I watch it, I think of Vincent Price movies. I think a little bit of Hammer horror. I definitely think of the modern gory stuff.
Uh-huh.
Not as much French Extreme, let's say, although it might have had an impact there. I don't know.
That's what I think, though, is mm-hmm. I see Gaspar Noé.
Oh,
that's
really?
What I see when I watch Eyes Without a Face.
Okay, yeah, I can see that too.
Here's the problem with that. That doesn't fucking answer the question.
No, it doesn't at all. No, not even a little bit. No, it articulates the problem is what it does. Right. So if we had come up with that 10 minutes ago, everybody would know what we're talking about. No, that's exactly the problem. And maybe the answer, like always, is that it doesn't matter. It influenced a lot of people.
Right.
But to watch it today and go, what are the elements of it that really stand out? What are the things you didn't think you would see in a film from, what, 1960, 60s?
I think so.
Peeping Tom kind of territory, somewhere around that.
Yeah.
And
it's the floppy face. It's the face removal. That's the one. Yeah. That's the only part. That, you know, that is definitely...
Really, the pack of beagles eating a man to death didn't remind you of anything else?
I know this isn't exactly where you were intending to dive, but I think that it's definitely a tangent I want to hit. It's not common for me, and I just mentioned Gaspar Noé, so this shouldn't be a shocker. It's not common for me to watch a movie other than Nymphomaniac Part 2 and go, I need to stop watching this. This is too much.
Oh, I'm so excited for that.
But Eyes Without a Face had when they're removing the face, mm-hmm. you know, they're being very particular, very careful, very ginger. And I'll be honest, I wasn't quite as knotted up to the point where I went, this is too much. I need to quit. But I was a little bit upset by it.
Uh-huh.
And it's 2016.
Okay, so this gets back to our original problem because this is exactly where I wanted to go. I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking.
Yeah.
I'm going, but the face scene. And
yeah.
Also, I felt the same way. I felt exactly the same way. I'm going, but her face is wiggling apart from her head. I don't know. Ooh, this is...
Yeah.
Ugh. And, you know, the thing that's great about that is from an effects standpoint, I think they would use probably the same technique today. I think they accomplished it.
They better because I couldn't distinguish the person's face from whatever the fuck they were pulling off the person's face.
Yeah. And it's the movement that really sells it. Something that I wish people in effects focused on more than just the texture or just a good effects artist focuses on all of those things. But when we think about, say, computer generated effects, that's the big piece people say is always lacking, is it doesn't move. That's the uncanny valley part. It doesn't move like it should. And when people start mixing in or using physical elements for reference, that's when we start to get a better sense of, okay, it's moving like a normal thing. The movement is really, if you're going to stare at the pixels on a 1080p copy of this movie, you're going to see it's a prosthetic. But it doesn't matter when you're just sitting there watching it like a person, because the way it moves in your head is how it would move when the face is coming off.
Right.
And it just, that's why you squirm, because you feel like they're really removing a face. It can't really get better than that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess better texture and the things I was just complaining about would make it a little better.
So all the gore aside, I feel like there's some really interesting themes in this movie,
mm-hmm.
dealing with identity and all that stuff.
Identity and some such things.
Well, I don't know what they are. And I think that might be the disconnect for me,
mm-hmm.
is that here's how I feel. And I'll admit this is me being terrible at my job of randomly talking about some movies that people tell me to watch.
Uh-huh.
Actually, no, this is me being really good at that, but bad at having information.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the only way I would ever really get Eyes Without a Face, and this is something that rarely happens outside of Mulholland Drive, is I just feel like I need to watch it a lot of times end to end, back to back. I mean, I feel like the best double feature for Eyes Without a Face
is some more Eyes Without a Face.
Other than American Mary, yeah, is Eyes Without a Face. I think I need to watch it once and go, ugh, squishy face. And then another time go, but what is everybody talking about?
What does the squishy face mean?
Sure.
Yeah, where's the red lamp in Eyes Without a Face is what you're asking.
Exactly. Exactly.
The reason you probably have that problem is there's just so many things going on.
Yeah.
And they're all going on with some degree of, they're not done too intensely or too overtly. And also they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
Squishy face is very different than philosophical problems with identity.
Yeah.
And it's
not hitting me over the head as much as the Fountainhead did. So therefore, I think there's a callus there. I think if somebody's not literally pontificating to the camera, I need to wear that back down. I need to learn the subtlety of thematic elements again.
Who is John Galt anyways? Your focus is in different places. That's all I mean. It's thinking about, I think about motives a lot. I'm going, why is the surgeon doing this? Obviously, there's a weird kind of guilt element to all of this, but there's also pushing the boundaries, the Frankenstein man playing God. What can we do this facial transplant surgery? Can it be done? And because in fixing one person's face, we're mangling 10 other people's faces. So, you know, the difference between the girls that are picked up and the girl we're working on in the beginning, that's the key to everything. And the things that make that different are his relationship with her and how she got there. And then also that he's doing a little project with her and it's not working out. And I think, you know, you could redo the movie today and spend all this time showing how bummed he is that it's not working and his draw. You could make it the human centipede.
Right.
You can make it, but I want that centipede to work so badly. Maybe it's influential to the human centipede.
It probably is. I honestly, you know, Tom Six, this is weird. Maybe, maybe not. Tom Six, maybe, maybe not. Not sure Tom Six has ever seen a movie, to be honest.
Well, this is also, the question you're wondering is, should I be talking about the human centipede on an episode with Eyes Without a Face? If I you and I wouldn't wonder that.
But
right. If we had once again played the game of walk into a lecture about this and you raise your hand and go, kind of like the human centipede.
Right.
Would that be weird or would that be completely appropriate?
Sure.
And looking back at the other things that were popular in the time and really in the start of not Hammer Horror, but just the Universal Monsters, just the telling a movie using a metaphor, it reminds me a lot of things like, say, The Wolfman. There's a metaphorical implication built right into The Wolfman, and I'm not sure how much we explore it in the movie because you're already thinking about it. And something like Identity is perfect. It's going, well, you don't have a face. Maybe you'll have someone else's face. You got to wear this mask. So think about identity a little bit, and we're going to go do this movie. And, you know, you just handle that part on your own. One thing that tipped me a little bit to it, and probably in your favor, was that the original title for this, when it came to America, which is just the American interpretation, so maybe this doesn't make it that much more insightful, but it was the, what's the guy's name? Faustus, the Horror Chamber of Dr. Faustus, I think is the...
Oh, okay.
Which definitely sounds like a Vincent Price movie, you know?
Yeah, however, and to counter that argument, as quickly as you can spit it out, Lone Wolf and Cub, Shogun Assassin.
Yeah. Well, I was just remembering as I was telling you this that, oh, that wasn't the original title. It's the original American title. And all that says is meatheads in America went, eh, what's this? One of them chop up movies, yeah. The Horror Chambers, you know, the Red Mask of Death, or the the Vincent Price movies.
Yeah,
with all the, just pick one.
Yeah,
the awfulness of the basement of Dr. Price.
Yeah,
is basically all of those movies.
Her blood was there.
Her blood was there. Can I take that? Can I have that one?
Yeah, that's yours. It's yours, man.
I think that's
on me.
The game we should start playing is
Creative Commons 3. Yeah.
Yeah. You just start giving me titles and then I'll go make the film. And that's how we'll, that's how we'll do this. So, I mean, I think there's a bit of exploitation there. I think there's a bit of, we show this face moving around and it freaks people out. And then it also has, you know, themes that can be played around with. The place that the movie comes from, the interest of the director, is really one of the insights that I'm always looking for in movies, because that gives me an indication of what other things the director might be playing with that maybe isn't there directly, that isn't at the forefront of the movie. If he's going, okay, I want to do some kind of exploitative horror movie, or he's been hired to do it, or there's a book about it or whatever, and then he starts thinking, well, what seems like it's got more there to it than it really does? Oh, I know, something about identity. Yeah, that'll work. That'll give me an excuse to cut a girl's face off.
Yeah.
Or is he going, I really need to speak about identity. And, you know, it's going to be hard, but the best way to do that is really to cut a woman's face off.
Yeah.
And it makes you look for entirely different stuff in the movie.
Like whether or not Nicolas Cage is playing Nicolas Cage or whether Nicolas Cage is playing John Travolta.
I would love to know where that movie started. Somebody went to see a New Beverly screening of Eyes Without a Face that night, and they went home and they went, I've got an idea. Let's make it modern. Put, yeah, I don't know, John Travolta and Nicolas Cage in it. That sounds exactly like that year what you would have said. Give me a John Travolta type and a Nicolas Cage type. And they were both just sitting behind them in the theater like, we can hear you. But a lot of people say the director's intentions don't matter. The end product matters. And I think that's mostly true, but I do like thinking about the director's intention because it tells me as a common person what else maybe I should look for.
Sure.
It's a clue to me that there's other stuff in the film.
Right.
Not to go, well, the director didn't mean this, so don't think about it. It can't be that for you. It can't be, Donnie Darko's not supposed to be personal. It's supposed to have fireworks in it. Therefore, you're wrong. You know what I mean?
Or the room is a comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. If you don't take it that way, that's totally fine. That's the wonder of artistic interpretation. But I don't want to miss out on going, the room is a tragedy too, and watching it and trying to look for that, because that's so insightful to me. Maybe even insightful to the original reason I like it, you know, in the first place. Tell me something about Canada.
American Mary is filmed there. The film American Mary. So Canada is part of America. Come on. Let's not be jerks here. Canada
can, less true now than ever.
Canada can be America too.
Hashtag build that wall.
American Mary.
Please don't use that, actually.
American Mary is what the Soska sisters did when they couldn't pull off a fourth Ginger Snaps movie. So they just got Catherine Isabel to move on over. And made a movie about body modification. Mm-hmm. This movie is a movie that we talked last week about the fraternity and sistership. Yeah, that's right. I'm doing both.
Oh, wow.
Of movies that kind of have this cult midnight appeal, but don't have a family.
Mm-hmm.
American Mary is probably the closest you get to May without trampling it. I mean, not to say that it's a missed opportunity for a double feature because it's a little bit on the nose and it doesn't really thematically tie in correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got that same vibe. It's very new metal, very slick, it's hot goth. You know what I mean? I'm coming up with,
there's an attitude toward it.
Yeah.
To it. Yeah.
You can tell by the music, but I don't think it's a real word, but I'm definitely going to coin the term hot goth for both this movie and May.
Hashtag hot goth. Are we going to?
Yeah. Hashtag hot goth. Hashtag babies for Soska.
It's got a jackalope song in it. That makes it hot goth. I think that's.
Yeah.
Cause the Birthday Massacre was too expensive. I assume. I don't know.
Right.
No, I like Jackalope, actually. I think Trent Reznor had something to do with that, but I can't remember what the fuck it was. So
I'm sure you do internet. Think that. some like it hot goth. And I think that...
No hashtag on that one. Too many characters.
No way. So this movie, the first time I saw it, and this was a little while ago, the first time I saw it, I remember thinking two things. One, Eric will love this. Two, this movie is fucking good. And then time went by. The greatest foe and friend that is to cinema for you and I.
Mm-hmm.
This evil, bitter creature that shapes and molds films to its own desires, time.
Yeah.
And we came back around to now I have to watch it on the show. And I still thought to myself, here's what I thought to myself. And I'm going to call you out a little bit, but don't worry. I thought to myself before I watched it again, I bet Eric's going to like this more than me. and that I probably was just in a really good mood the first time I saw it. I don't know why I felt this way. And I'm happy to say that I was vastly incorrect. I changed my Netflix rating. I added a star.
Oh, that's great.
But this movie is so much of... So American Mary is the movie that I want all the bad Splat Pack movies to be.
Uh-huh.
Every time I watch a Splat Pack movie, the best thing that could happen is American Mary.
Yeah.
American Mary is an example of when you go blind into a horror movie you've never heard of, but the title was okay. And it just pays off 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It does all the creepy, weird gore stuff that you like. It's got, really, really strong sexual overtones.
Mm.
It's got this strong feminine lead character. There's all this great stuff that is, I mean, to me, it is a checklist of quintessential, alt horror.
Yeah.
It is right up there with Hatchet. It's right up there with all of those movies. And that's one of the reasons that I remember latching onto the Soska sisters is because it's such an odd thing to have your filmmaking people be a pair of twins.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember an
hashtag hot goth twins. Is that
hashtag hot goth twins?
Yeah. There's a space in there. It's not all part of the hashtag. I'll draw you a diagram.
But I'm so pleased by this movie every time I watch it. This is a movie, so to kind of contrast this to Eyes Without a Face, not that this is any better or worse than Eyes Without a Face, but this is a movie that I fucking get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it's a testament to very much the time and place it came out. It came out, I mean, this movie is tailored for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was a mall goth. This is a post mall goth movie.
Yeah.
This is what do mall goths do in a career world?
Yeah. Right? I was just going to say, if you found yourself in the best place you could have ever dreamed of being, you'd be making movies like American Mary. That would be, or doing what American Mary's doing. I guess those are the two career paths.
Either way, it just tells me. And on top of that, there's the creepy, body modification thing. Mm-hmm. the normal body modification stuff where they put in the subdermal horns and all that stuff. I'm just making
the Elfman horns.
Yeah, the Elfman horns. That's all well and good, but like the stuff that for me is just the it's just a pleasure to watch, and I never just I just I can't look away from the screen whenever any of the two, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but the two characters with
the Betty Boop character.
Yeah, the Betty Boop character. And then the other girl whose vagina she removes. She leaves her vagina. She probably just removes her labia.
Okay. As much as she can, I think is the phrase she used.
So
sew it up as much as you can.
Those characters are so great because the movie is so grounded otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you get these visceral, violent, Hostel type moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And Hostel's so good because it's gut punches in a way where you go, this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
I have no reference that says this cannot. And American Mary has this gritty, very real tone going on. You know, you'd start in college, which, you know, everybody has an identity for what it's like to be miserable in class and also to know more than your professor. Everybody knows what that feels like or thinks they do. And so you get all this identity for me, you know, just constantly go, I identify with this character. I know where she is.
Sure.
I mean, we're from the Midwest. So Canada and the Midwest are the same thing. They look exactly the same.
Toronto and Chicago are the same city.
Yeah. So by the time the Betty Boop character walks in, you go, okay, this is getting weird.
Yeah.
It feels like Mirror Mask has just walked into my high school years, right?
Yeah. The amount of abrasive that was the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, wow, this is a perfect movie. What's going to throw it off? Whoa, hold on. Whoa. And now it's my favorite part of the movie. Now I watch it and
go,
hey, let's inject cartoons into this otherwise very grounded film.
Right.
And then you get really what makes it for me is Mary's response
totally
to it. And that's another thing that I think separates it from May a lot. I mean, I would have no problem going, both of these movies live great side to side, or side by side rather, because our protagonist in May and our protagonist in American Mary, they have totally different problems, but they also come at them from such a different place that the movies almost seem, I mean, you would have no problem going, these are completely different movies. Catherine Isabel, this is one of my favorite Catherine Isabel things.
Oh, definitely.
I think Catherine Isabel is just wonderful.
Well, also, but Ginger Snaps though.
Hannibal would be the other place that I go.
Oh yeah. You go Hannibal, I go Ginger Snaps.
Yeah. That's a tragedy that had to happen in that direction. We should just be doing all three of those. I don't know why we're, it's more work on your part to watch all of Hannibal, I guess, than for me to, well, I don't know. We'll find out on Killpalooza someday, maybe if it's more work to watch all of Ginger Snaps. She is, when we talked before, and we don't do this enough, we need to make a fucking thing out of this. But when you, let me make this really personal so that I can tell this easier. We were trying to cast for the short, and there's only one guy in the short. Now, picking out a guy, and we went a totally different direction, but trying to think of a horror named guy, there's a million options to choose from. Go ahead, compose a list in your head right now of names in horror, and they're all going to be dudes, and you're going to have no problem coming up with them. And then do that for women, and you have basically nothing.
Right.
You have.
I can think of two. I can think of two without Catherine Isabel.
Yeah, and I don't want to increase either of their stock. I think they've got it well enough. But Catherine Isabel was the first one I hit on where I went, oh fuck, of course Catherine Isabel. And it's a tragedy that there's a lot of women doing really great work all the time in horror that are. I think about Naomi Watts like this, how she's always getting involved at a very deep level in these weird projects, not always horror, but very much in that area. Movies that are scary, I would at least say.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting and fighting and fighting and elevating the genre so much. And then nobody puts her on a list. Nobody thinks of her when these things come up. And Catherine rocks this movie. I mean, she had to. You know, she starts in a place where she's relatable, she has some debt, she sees this world as being very strange and turned off by it. She's told she can't walk sexy. you know, and she ends in a place where she's lounging around in stilettos. She's murdering people. She's a central figure of this weird community. We have to watch her lose her relatability, the thing we identify with, and wind up dead inside. The film rides on her working her magic, which she does, and I could watch that again and again. The thing that's kind of tragic about seeing this now, and, you know, I did this to myself, but we tried to steal her and basically everyone who worked on this movie for the short we did. And like idiots, we found out that they are all Canadian and none of them are here. And we would not have the money to put them up here. But there's so much I like about this movie. Makeup, production design, you know, the sets are, her apartment is gorgeous. The club is gorgeous. Even the medical areas. I mean, every fucking set in this is great. And I didn't think about it, but we would even steal the Soskas if we could. I think I don't know where the fuck.
Right.
To direct instead of me, maybe it would be what we should steal them for. But that's an area that it's hard talking about American Mary with them first, because I could do a whole 20 minutes on the Soskas.
Yeah.
And this was something that I remember we were at a point where you were just finding them and getting excited about it. And the same thing happened with me, and it happened with everybody else that I've ever told about them. And it may happen with you, dear audience, if you haven't yet. Soskud, but it's an immediate infatuation.
Yeah.
It's an immediate, holy fuck, what? What is this? And then for days, all you could do is think about the Soskas and all these movies. And I didn't know about any of this.
Yeah.
And then American Mary happens. And I went, wait, what? And they do this and they look like this and they're from here and they're into this thing and they made this stuff. And suddenly I'm going, it's as if you've walked into another dimension where there are very iconic filmmakers, and this is one of them, you know?
Yeah, totally.
How are the Soskas not more well known for how fucking weird and there's such a narrative to them? They're so...
Yeah.
I don't know what the word is.
I mean, Soska, I can't think of a word, but what I can, the way that I can qualify this, and I think it's kind of the page you're on, is if the Soskas existed, let's say 70 years ago, Tim Burton would have made their biopic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, right after Ed Wood. It would have been boom, Ed Wood, boom, the Soska twins movie.
Right. Well, Ed Wood would have had a meeting at a diner with the Soska twins to find out how to make movies, because he would have been their idol. They would have been his idol. We were talking on the last episode about Phantom of the Paradise, and there's a character in it who may be a great musician, but perhaps isn't marketable. And when I see the Soskas, I think the word is marketable, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's the fact that you are instantly drawn to this as an oddity. Director pairs, not very common. Right. You can name them because they're so uncommon, you know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And director pairs who are family, only common in director pairs.
Yep.
So there's even less of that. Female directors, there are basically none. And there are more now than ever before, and there are still basically none. Totally overlooked by the industry, and also just a smaller percentage of women direct films. And then goth subculture, you know?
Yeah.
Anything in and around that, even... I mean, we look at a lot of the directors we talk about, and they are, you don't have a lot of people like Rob Zombie, you know what I mean?
Right.
You don't have a lot of people who are very just into a lifestyle and doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And
Wachowskis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but it's all the same. I mean, the Wachowskis, I guess I kind of deflated everything you named, but,
no, I mean, you know, there are still elements, I think, of the Wachowskis that are, you know, it's a great comparison for these two, because the Wachowskis are so, they're more well-known than some of their films are. You know, the reputation, they have a reputation.
Totally, totally, yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that the Soskas are so interesting to me, is I don't understand how they don't have a reputation like any of these, especially in horror, you know, we're well traveled in this at this point. How did this not come up on year two? You know?
Yeah.
It's such a fucking crazy thing. And then going through their filmography, the subculture they fall into in film is perhaps a lot different than you would think, you know, they would actually, where they would actually go. They're doing a lot of wrestling movies, you know?
Yeah, they're one of those WCW contract people, like Leprechaun Origins.
Yeah, right. Is that, I think that's WWE now, right?
I don't know, man.
WWE Studios is it's the Marvel Studios of wrestling.
Which one's the one that Billy Corgan owns?
Does he own one of them? We're going to have to talk about that. But they have there are movies that are meant to be vehicles for wrestlers as actors.
Like Leprechaun Origins.
Right. Well, and I think about See No Evil 2 and Vendetta. Those are the big ones from them. It wasn't the path they were originally going down, but I think WWE Studios saw, okay, marketability, iconography, personality, really. They understood the personality. Words like marketable seem so cynical because it's not that. I just don't understand how it's not also that.
Right.
And they just started doing a game show called Hellevator, which is probably exactly what you think it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's a little more reality based and it's a little more putting them in front of the camera. They are in American Mary, the twins.
Yeah.
They are in the film. And that's pretty much them on and off camera. I mean, a little bit more. It's if you imagine them off camera and how excited and what they would do with their appearance to be on camera, that's exactly the spot.
Right.
And they also had this big push with their first movie from Eli Roth. So this is totally in the wheelhouse. And I don't know how I had a blind spot to it. They did this movie called Dead Hooker in a Trunk, which is a total backyard film. It's a total, very little money. They're Canadian friends. They're in it because when you have, it's one of those movies that you're in because you have so little money, you don't have actors.
Right, right.
So you and I star in a movie, you know, that's they're making double feature the movie. Not to be dickish, but I think they're at a point even more amateur than that, where they're just assembling, you know, they're learning, right? Not to say we aren't or anything, but they're
right.
At that point, we're definitely nowhere near American Mary. So let me just knock this down. But I was surprised to see they'd only done one film before American Mary and how much they were obviously still learning on it. And it is still really good for where it was. But to have made the leap from Dead Hooker in a Trunk to American Mary is a huge fucking leap. And also Dead Hooker in a Trunk is a very independent movie they made. Most people only know about it because Eli Roth said, hey, check out this fucking movie. It's amazing. And then American Mary comes out and you see the trajectory and then Left Turn into See No Evil and Vendetta.
And ABCs of Death 2. Come on, man.
That is, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. And they also appeared in one of the shorts in ABCs of Death 2.
Yeah.
Which I thought I saw them in and everybody else debated me on it. And I was like, but it's two twin. No, it was clearly the Soskas. What are you saying? So these are people who love to make movies. And I think they're taking on any project that sounds interesting to them. They're not worried about their own marketability. I think they want to go out and have fun with these things, which is even more reason to celebrate them as directors. They're just going, bring it on. Whatever you got. You want to do a See No Evil sequel? Then fine, fucking whatever. Let's do a thing with it. And to see them still experiment and try these different things as they're doing them, the whole thing is fucking fascinating to me. And hopefully it's fascinating to the people who didn't know about them yet, because man, the moment that you said Soska Twins, it just opened a whole Pandora's box for me. It was just like, here's something you can do for the next 2 weeks.
Right.
See, I went on such a spree. I was watching their short commercial blood drive things that they're making and just blowing through all of that stuff. And I had such a blast with it. It was so, I still get the feeling like I'm at the beginning of something. that this is still a really hip underground band for me that nobody knows about. And I feel like at any second, they're going to be gigantic. And all it takes is a show on Discovery or something, or a something, something Blumhouse, or I don't know. And then
something, something Blumhouse is probably the most likely situation.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I feel like even bigger than that though. I feel like here's the picture I have in my head. And you explain to me why I haven't seen this fucking picture. It's a picture of Jimmy Fallon sitting in a chair and across from him, the Soska twins. Why is that not happening? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just that fucking photo in your head is like, people tune into that. Mm-hmm. American fixation.
Well, you say that, and I immediately jump to the Jimmy Fallon sketch where he's riding around the Overlook Hotel on a big wheel and comes around the corner.
Yeah.
And the Soska twins are in the hallway. Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Listen, you get what I'm saying. We have a website where you can write to us instead of the Soska twins. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but can we promote their Twitter instead? What's their fucking Twitter?
Twisted Twins.
Go talk to, that's the name of their production company, right? Twisted Twins. Is there like a Z or anything weird in that?
Fuck, probably not.
Soska Twitter. There's an underscore. That's what it is. It's
Twisted underscore Twins.
You got it. You got it. And I actually feel like, see, this is how you know this is such a new thing. I think a great place to find out about the Soska twins starts on Twitter. I think that's how modern of a strange place we're in with this. I keep wanting to go back to words like commodity, but I'm just so offended that they aren't bigger. I keep trying to put them in an action figure package. I don't know why that's happening. The website's doublefeature.fm. And Michael's finally memorized the producers.
Yep. The producers this time are Maxwell Harley.
Nope.
And
God damn it. It's Jonathan Radke, Eric Tachek.
Jonathan Radke, Eric Tachek.
Aaron Shore.
Aaron Shore.
Fuck off. Debbie Starin and Alexi Love. And when I'm done saying that, I think you say the movies for next time.
Yeah. So the films next time we're doing, I'm sorry. I feel like I've steamrolled you this year on the show.
What? What's happening now?
Because next time is another pair of movies that I went, hey, this would be a great idea.
It's Touch of Evil in the Terminal or something. Now, I don't even know where I am. So I just keep coming here week after week. And
next time we're doing a movie about kidnapping and justice.
Mm.
And the different means and rationales that go along with it. Also different tones handling these very similar situations. So we're going to be doing Prisoners, the Denis Villeneuve movie with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. And then we're going to pair that with Big Bad Wolves, which I don't know any of the names of the actors because it's foreign and I'm an American pig. So that said, strap in and watch more fucking film.
Bye.
You American pig. This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.